there's still something between them, even, you know, 20 years after their childhood ended.
I guess that's more one of my main things throughout the book, is that you know these people, and you knew them as kids, and you knew them when you were both kids, and you know, what do you owe that other person? What you have these formative experiences, and you're very close to each other in childhood, and sometimes you just grow apart. You know, that happens, and that's happened with me as well. But there are these friendships that carry forward and persist, and there's a lot of history there, good history, and I suppose, you know, sort of fraught history as well. But the idea is, how much do you owe that old burden of friendship, that old loyalty, that fealty that you guys got through some really hairy stuff together? And partially that goes back to the sense of them being in the same city still, and sort of the streets that made them. They're still on those streets, whether they want to or not. So to me, it wasn't surprising that Duncan called Owen, because even though they're on separate sides of the law, and even though there is some, you know, water under that particular bridge, it's also the closest person that Duncan can't think of anyone that he's closer to than Owen.
They get lost in the woods, not once, but twice.
Yes.
And for a book that, you know, is Cataract City, I thought this was going to be a very urban thing, but yeah, the biggest, most exciting chunks of the novel actually happen in this kind of countryside,
but
sort of also industrial waste.
You're right. I mean, you know, Niagara Falls has got several different elements. You know, you've got the touristy trap part of it with Clifton Hill, and you've got the casino, and then you've got the border. And if Niagara Falls Canadian side is gritty, Niagara Falls American side is, yeah, I won't say apocalyptic, that's not fair, but it's gritty plus. And then of course you have the touristy idea, but then behind that you've got the working people, you know, that sort of the full-time residents, and that's always what's fascinated me. And then of course you don't have to go too far before you run out of any of that, and you've just got country and farmland, and so I think it was sort of like there's the adventure narrative, I suppose, when they're lost in the woods both times. I'd say it's more of a Stand By Me narrative when they're young, and then it's more Deliverance sort of when they're older, you know. But in both cases, you're right, I sort of retreated to the countryside at the beginning of the book and at the end of the book, because I personally like writing not only about boyhood, but also about you know, the outdoors and nature, and it just seemed like an interesting circularity.
The villain in the book, drink water.
Mm-hmm.
I got to love to hate him,
mm,
and kind of had a grudging respect for him by the end, as I think Owen does too.
I think they both do. You know, I feel the same way having written him. I feel like he does, you know, heinous things, obviously, and he's part of an empire, or he's built an empire, really, that you know, that exists obviously on the opposite side of the law, and that traffics in a lot of, you know, not only dubious, but definitely morally dubious things. But I think there is a line in the book, something on, and Duncan expresses it, that, you know, it was easy to hate drink water, and I did. But he seemed like the sort of man who could do exactly what he wanted with his life. And, you know, Duncan holds sort of a whip dog respect for that ability. And it is rare. It's a rare thing to be able to find anyone in this life who can do exactly what they want with their life. And whether Drinkwater actually does that or not, you know, that's obviously Dunk projecting it. But I feel the same. I feel that there's certainly, he does heinous things, and he's certainly not a lovable character. But there are elements in him that I too respected. You know, coming from where he, my assumption of where he came from, and the hurdles that were facing him, and the way that he made good for himself, and potentially the only ways that he could. That's not to, you know, forgive his actions, obviously, even though he's a fictional character. But yeah, he was a lot more. He was fun to write, but he was more difficult than, say, than Owen or Duncan, not only because of the things he did, but also because he's Native and I'm white, and you make the nastiest character in your book not of your own race. And so there's obviously some due consideration that needed to be given to that and decide to continue to go down that line. But obviously I did decide to.
Are you done with these characters? Because I kind of feel like there's an Edwina story that's missing.
Yeah, that was another thing that got discussed in... because the first version of the book that was accepted but understood that edits would be made is we wanted to bring Edwina out more in the beginning of the novel, sort of in the second part, the dog racing part. And dutifully, that was done. I mean, it was a necessary adjustment and change, and I'm glad we made it. But sort of as the narrative gears are turning towards the end, it's for the circularity that I was talking about. You know, you want the boys together at the beginning, and you want the boys isolated again at the end. And there's no room for Edwina at that point. But as to whether to bring them back, a lot of that is, listen, if the book does well, you know, then it's like, if there's interest in it, then it certainly would be something that I would be open to. It all depends really on how the book is embraced or not embraced.
I really enjoyed it. A lot of fun.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
The book is Cataract City. I've been speaking with the novelist Craig Davidson, and Cataract City is published by Doubleday Canada.